It's 6 past 12 and 78 degrees in Santa Fe as At Noon continues from KSFR News on Monday, June 24th. Coming up this hour, as wildfires continue to smolder around Santa Fe, we'll take a look back 2 years when a fast-moving fire became the largest in New Mexico history at the time and also almost consumed the town and lab of Los Alamos. The head of a statewide advocacy group tells us why New Mexico has fallen to the bottom of that list for child well-being. And the George Zimmerman murder trial of Trayvon Martin gets underway in Florida. I'm Bill Dupuy, back with those stories, 60 Seconds with Christopher Hagen, and more after headlines. A bronze statue of Medal of Honor recipient Sergeant First Class Leroy Petrie has been dedicated on the grounds of Santa Fe City Hall. The event came after Petrie parachuted into Fort Marcy Park. Petrie is a Santa Fe native who lost his right hand in Afghanistan while trying to save fellow soldiers from a hand grenade. He's the 14th New Mexican to be awarded the Medal of Honor. Trails maintained by the city of Santa Fe are still open, but concern about wildfires has forced National Forest officials to close the entire Santa Fe National Forest to the public. Hyde Memorial State Park is also closed, but Bandelier National Monument is open to visitors. Both the Thompson Ridge Fire that has been burning in the Hemis and the Horoso Fire east of Espanola have not grown in size over the past several days. It's been 2 years since the Las Conchas fire near Los Alamos. It burned more than 150,000 acres and forced residents of Los Alamos and workers at the National Lab to evacuate. Coming up on At Noon in a moment, a look back at what happened. Supporters of a higher minimum wage are making moves to introduce the city of Santa Fe's so-called living wage to the rest of the county. The Journal North says they're gathering petition signatures now for a proposal to the county commission. Santa Fe's wage of $10.51 an hour is second highest in the nation behind San Francisco. Minimum wage workers in Santa Fe County now earn $7.50. Children in New Mexico are having a tough time of it. A new report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation says New Mexico now ranks dead last in the nation for child well-being. For the first time, New Mexico is lower than Mississippi in this category. Veronica Garcia is head of the statewide advocacy group New Mexico Voices for Children. She says it boils down to poverty. We'll hear from her in a few minutes. Tonight, Albuquerque City Council will consider a proposal to accept $300,000 in state aid aimed at keeping freeways clean. According to KOB Television, a recent nationwide study revealed there are 25,000 accidents and about 80 deaths a year as a result of litter and debris causing accidents on roadways. Early childhood education in New Mexico now has an extra $16 million to help families access child care assistance, pre-kindergarten programs, and home visiting programs. Governor Martinez announced the funds were allocated to the Children, Youth, and Families Department from the legislature and will be available as of July 1st. Longtime KSFR show host Diego Mulligan has died following a long illness.
Good afternoon, live from Santa Fe Public Radio. You're on The Journey Home. We're the independent alternative all about people, planet, and politics. I'm Diego Mulligan, and today on Sustainable Tuesday,
The Journey Home was Santa Fe's longest continuing daily radio talk show. Diego Mulligan is survived by his wife, Jennifer, and children, Michaela, Joss, and Jaden. On today's Journey Home at 5, KSFR will present a special memorial program to our friend and colleague. In weather, sunny and hot again with highs around 90 degrees today, 78 right now. On Wall Street, stocks have been tumbling all morning. The Dow Jones is down 98 points where it had been down nearly 200. Right now it stands at 14,701. At noon from KSFR News, Bill Dupuy and the Midday News team with you. Glad to have you with us. Looking back in time, in the early afternoon on Sunday, June 26, 2011, A tree in the Santa Fe National Forest fell onto a power line near the town of Los Alamos, igniting a wildfire. Before finally being extinguished several days later, the Las Conchas fire burned more than 150,000 acres and was at the time the largest wildfire in New Mexico history. It mushroomed overnight from zero to 40,000 acres. National fire expert Bill Gabbert told KSFR News at the time that kind of growth was unprecedented.
That's an extremely fast-moving fire. It's almost unheard of. One other thing about the fire behavior, as we call it, it was still extremely active at 3 a.m. Very early Monday morning. Most fires won't lie down at night and not move anywhere nearly as fast after the sun stops heating up the vegetation, and usually the wind decreases a bit in the evening, but the fire was still burning extremely hot at 3 a.m. when the infrared aircraft were flying over the fire trying to map it.
KSFR's Charles Maynard was on the scene from the beginning.
The fire chief says it's the most active fire he's ever seen in his career, and he was here for the Del Cerro fire. The other big news is at this point, it's within 50 feet of lab property.
Resident Barbara Lai had just recently moved to New Mexico when the fire broke out.
Well, at 3:30 in the afternoon, my granddaughter, who spends the summer with me from Virginia, came out, and we took a ride up to the ski hill to do a hike. And as we got to the ski hill, we saw, you know, the smoke all just on the other side of the ski hill. Being from back east, we were pretty alarmed. We'd never seen a forest fire before. I had just moved out here in March to start a job, and so I was really surprised, and I was a little scared.
Wayne Torpy, the Los Alamos police chief, first saw the fire from a distance.
Well, actually, I was just coming back from a trip up to Colorado, traveling down into the community, and I first observed the fire as I was approaching Española. As we are now seeing around New Mexico with so many fires, it's somewhat unbelievable and scary to see something that close to your community and really not know or understand what's going to happen next.
A great deal of concern was focused on the proximity of the fire to not only the town but the Los Alamos National Lab. The fire threatened the lab, but on Monday, lab spokesman Kevin Rourke gave assurance the lab property was safe.
But it's important for, I think, your listeners to know that there is no fire on laboratory property this morning.
On June 27th, mandatory evacuations of Los Alamos took place. Chief Torpy describes how that went.
You know, we were very fortunate. I think that the folks that I had working for me and the fire department personnel had come up with a really good plan, and that plan was executed, and we had no problems at all.
New resident Barbara Lai explained what being suddenly uprooted was like.
I was actually at the grocery store shopping, and there were some firefighters that were talking about the fire. This was pretty early in the morning, and they didn't think that there would be a mandatory evacuation. But then I was back in my apartment across the street with my granddaughter, and we heard the police car come by and say mandatory evacuation, and my landlady came around and said, "You have to get out." We came home Sunday night and gathered together all of our important papers just in case, because we'd been hearing rumors and told what to do. So we put all the papers in my car. We got in the car, started down the main hill, and had absolutely no idea what to do because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know the area. We didn't know anything. And then we heard from a friend through a text that there were shelters in Española, or at the high school in Pohaki. We slept through the night. And there were folks there with kids. There was a lady that came down from Española with her kids and church, and her daughter was in high school. And she led the kids in activities and coloring books. And we had use of the facilities. They could go to the pool at the hotel. Mayor Lucero opened up the library and the recreation center so the kids could go there. They went bowling at Cities of Gold and at the Santa Clarin. And there was things to do all the time. There was always food. There was always fresh fruit. It was really kind of a vacation.
Los Alamos residents relied on the media for news of the evacuation and for fire updates. KSFR's Charles Maynard was there to provide it.
and they want to get word to all the people that have been evacuated from Los Alamos. Let them know the power's still on in town. Don't worry. The streets are being guarded by the state police, city police, and National Guard. Homes are safe. They want people to know that their mail is going to be delivered to the Pewaukee High School. There's a post office set up there. They can get their mail starting today between 9 and 3. Just have ID and you can get your mail.
Sharon Stover was a county council chair during the fire. She described the lasting effects of the fire on residents.
Well, 2 years for now, the fires, I think it brings back anytime people smell smoke or they see that plume, everyone in this community, their thoughts right away go to, are we in for another one? We still have, you know, Pueblo Canyon has a lot of, there's still that fear. So I just feel like it's always on this time of year, it's always on people's minds whenever we see that kind of, any kind of plume coming up. It has to cross your mind.
Barbara Lai has since settled permanently in Los Alamos.
Actually, since that time, I now have a house. I bought a property up here this past January. I still see my shelter buddies around town, and we still say, hi, how are you doing? It's just been great. It really told me all the goodness in the community, all the goodness in Santa Clara and in Española and Pewaukee, and how everybody in New Mexico really does care about each other. And everybody pitches in to help out each other. I mean, I was totally alone here. And I really was never totally alone here, and I found that out.
Police Chief Torpy has stayed on the job since Las Conchas and hasn't even considered relocating.
That's never been a consideration in my career or where I live. You know, if you look across the country, wherever you live, there seems to be some part of, you know, of nature that affects those communities, whether it's tornadoes, huge snowstorms, or hurricanes or fires. So when you're in the business that I'm in, you enjoy yourself when you can and you work when you have to.
Sharon Stover is now the county clerk for Los Alamos.
So we have this logo that says Los Alamos says thanks, and we really truly do say thanks to everyone for all that they helped us with for both fires.
The state is now in its third year of a drought, and Chief Torpy has this warning today for New Mexicans.
I just hope that the citizens realize that this year, not just the citizens of Los Alamos, but the citizens of New Mexico and beyond realize that, you know, we are in a very dangerous situation with fires, and, you know, we're seeing community after community placing out administrative law that says that, you know, people should be cautious with purchase of fireworks and shutting down areas for recreation to try to keep from having more of our forests lost. And you know, I think that we lose residences and buildings and fires and hopefully never lives, but those things do happen. And, you know, this is a tough time for New Mexico and I think a good part of the country with drought. And I just hope that folks would yield to that and follow those rules diligently so we don't have any more major fires, or at least minimize the major fires in our communities.
Los Alamos Police Chief Wayne Torpy wrapping up that report on the Los Conchas fire of 2 years ago, which was produced by KSFR's Charles Maynard. 12:20 on at noon from KSFR News. We've been reporting that New Mexico's children are hard hit by poverty, so much so that New Mexico has fallen to the bottom of the list in a study by the Annie E. Casey Foundation conducted into child well-being. Veronica Garcia is head of the statewide advocacy group, New Mexico Voices for Children. I asked her about New Mexico's new ranking of 50.
Right. We traded places with Mississippi, and the main reason is that Mississippi showed improvement in a number of children enrolled in pre-K, or percent of children not attending preschool. New Mexico had 62%. While it is an improved score by 1%, Mississippi did a better job. So we need to get more of our kids in pre-K. Obviously, that was what caused our shift between Mississippi and New Mexico. Also, Mississippi showed an improvement, and we showed a worsening
of children and families where the household head lacks a high school diploma. So educational attainment level of the head of household dropped by 1%. So obviously our adults not being educated also impacted our overall profile and our ranking.
Well, here we are vying with Mississippi to see who's the worst.
Right. That's crazy, isn't it?
It does strike one as strange. Now, New Mexico has a rural population. So does Mississippi. But where else do we fail? We must not be doing other things right either.
Well, I think it's the issue of poverty. So, you know, there's four major areas, and I can hit those very quickly
you'd
like, Bill. So economic well-being is the first domain. They call them four domains, and we were 49th in economic well-being. So 31% of our children live in poverty. That was a worsening. We were 26% in 2005. 37% of our children's parents lack secure employment, and children living in households with a high housing cost burden was 36%, and teens not in school and not working was 11%, so around 13,000 teens. So economic well-being, we were 49th. On education, the second domain, we were 49th. Children not attending preschool, 62%. Fourth graders not proficient in reading, 79%. Eighth graders not proficient in math, we had 76% of our kids were proficient. And high school students not graduating on time, so that's the four-year, stayed the same from 2005 to 2006. 9,000 or 33% of our students did not graduate on time.
But now you mentioned preschool as being one of the poor areas for New Mexico, but we heard recently that New Mexico has an astounding rate of flunkouts, of dismissals from preschool.
And I think, you know, some of that's what behavior issues. And if we kind of backward plan, we know that adverse childhood events in those first, you know, months of life and first years of life, you know, if there's domestic abuse in the home, alcoholism, any number of what they call adverse childhood events, a divorce, impacts children's cognitive development at those early years when the brain is being developed. So home visiting programs, we believe, can make a difference, and it's something that the legislature has begun to fund. And we passed a Home Visitation Accountability Act. I think that we really need to look at early intervention if we're going to change some of these. Obviously, more people graduating from high school, getting baccalaureate or post-secondary education training where they can have a living wage and not living in poverty will increase these rankings. Health, the third domain, we were 49th, and that had to do with percent of low birth weight babies. That worsened since the last ranking. Children without health insurance improved. We now have 9% or 47,000 children without health insurance. Child and teen deaths per 100,000, we had 36. That improved some from 05. We had 47 before. And teens who abuse alcohol and drugs remain unchanged at 9%. And the last domain is family and community. Mm-hmm. And children in single-parent families, 43%. We worsened. We were at 38 four or five years ago. Children and families where the household head lacks a high school diploma, as I said earlier, 22%. Children living in high poverty areas, 21%, and teen births per 1,000. We improved some. We improved significantly, actually quite a bit. We were at 62%, and now we're at 53 per 1,000. So there was some improvement in teen births. So overall, you know, if there's not one silver bullet, we know that early intervention is going to make a difference. Having a livable wage is going to make a difference. Access to health insurance will make a difference. So these are all important policy areas, and we also need to make sure that we're not giving the wrong kinds of tax cuts that decrease the revenue that funds these kinds of programs.
Well, it does seem to boil down to a common denominator of the health of the economy, the health of family incomes.
It all goes together. You can't separate just physical health and educational attainment and economic well-being. It's all tied together, education, health, and the economy. They all go together.
Now, not to throw a jab at her, but Governor Martinez frequently has photo ops with children where she's reading books to school children. Is there anything that the governor and the legislature can do? You say there's no one silver bullet, but what could be done to help begin alleviating the problem?
Well, if we look at one of the reasons that our ranking dropped was children not attending preschool. So let's make every effort to ensure that we enroll more children, that we find out what the roadblocks are to having children enroll in these programs or funding, make sure that it's adequately funded. Insurance, we just now are implementing the Affordable Care Act. We need to make sure that there aren't additional bureaucratic roadblocks. The concept of no wrong door, wherever you enter the system. Right now, the system for Medicaid and insurance in New Mexico is very, very complicated. And I know that the state applied for a centennial waiver so that it's not, it'll be more seamless. But what we want to make sure that in practice, there aren't unnecessary roadblocks and that we make the general public aware of the various insurance options and that they take advantage of that. We need to really work on teens not dropping out of high school and also adults finishing, going back to school, getting their GEDs and continuing their education. All of these things working together can make a big difference in New Mexico's rankings.
Well, New Mexico now ranks at the very bottom of this list, an unenviable position to be in.
Absolutely, but what's even worse about the number is the condition that our children are living in. And, you know, the lack of access to health care, living in poverty, and poor educational outcomes and not having the tools to ensure that they'll have an opportunity to succeed by increasing access to pre-K. So we have a lot of work cut out. We can either, curse the darkness or light a candle. And I think that we need to remain positive about what we can do to attempt to improve this picture for New Mexico's children and families.
A disturbing report, Dr. Veronica Garcia. Thanks for drawing our attention to it.
Thank you.
In business news, Twinkies are coming back. The company that brought the bankrupt brand last year says they're reintroducing the Twinkies line, including the box that'll look similar to the old one. With the addition of the line, the sweetest comeback in the history of ever. The price will stay the same as last fall. Speaking of Twinkies, we've got an extra 60 seconds for this Twinkie.
For several years, there has been much ado about something, gay marriage. A matter of divisive discussion, epithets, explosive and often hateful rhetoric, gay marriage, notwithstanding the preceding, is an idea whose time has come. And what of those who scream of the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman? Well, I am going to suggest that, and this will probably make everybody mad, that the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman, like the Jewish ban on eating pork, has its roots in ancient history, when the survival of our species was in doubt, and the more live bodies we had, the better our chances. Today, the criteria for two adult persons to get married should be only one thing, love. It's not all you need, but it's way ahead of everything else.
All you need is love.
For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.